Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to lighting, Graybar goes beyond parts and products. We help contractors turn plans into smart designs, manage kitting and deliverables, and navigate local codes so you can stay on time and on budget. Smart, scalable, job site ready. That's not just lighting. That's like kicking your project into Graybar mode. Yep, Graybar does that.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
After your 8 o'clock update, Mr. Minko, it is Rick Wolf who's along with the Sports Edge program. And then after your 9 o'clock update, you know who will be here?
Oh, absolutely. Baseball boy.
Ed Randall will be by. He'll be talking baseball.
Did you have something against that high chair? You were just towering over all of us. What a presence here, you know, in the studio. fitting for the Bob Salter empire.
You know, you should have gotten a picture of that.
Because I should have.
There are people here who would have highly appreciated.
Oh, I did. Picture. I took one.
Uh-oh.
Leave it to Rosenhaus.
He got a picture. Excellent.
He'll have to tweet it.
Even better. Mr. Minko is keeping us up to date on happenings in the sporting world this morning. I'm Bob Salter. We shift in this hour of our program into a discussion with the president of the Nassau County Police Benevolent Association. James McDermott is joining us on our program. His background is the most interesting one, having worked in law enforcement for a number of years. And he is joining us this hour of our program. We're talking about the work of the Nassau County PBA. We'll also get into talking about the situation with the MS-13 gang problem on Long Island. First of all, it's nice to have you join us on our program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Many things to begin us in this discussion, but I go back to something I was reading in preparation for our chat today and reading about the situation when your father, who was a city firefighter, as I understand, he woke you up on a Saturday morning and said, come on, you're taking the cop test. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what happened on a Saturday morning. I was all of 17 years old, so I probably was out the night before. I can't remember that far back, but he certainly startled me.
Well, did you always want to become a police officer?
No, I swear to you, I never thought about it until that second. He woke me up. My sons get a big kick out of that story. He woke me up. He says, come on, get up, you got a test. I go, it's Saturday. He says, you're taking a cop test. I go, I don't want to be a cop. And here I am 35 plus years later.
What has the experience been like?
Well, I started as a New York City police officer back in January of 1984. I worked in Bedford-Stuyvesant. So, I went right into the fire, so to speak. As a 20-year-old, it was cops and robbers back then. It couldn't be any more exciting than it was. I worked with great people. I worked with guys that were Vietnam veterans, guys that really knew how to do the job, and they taught me how to do it right. So it couldn't have been any more exciting for a 20-year-old, 20 to 24, before I left New York City.
Is the field one that, when young people ask you about it today, that you recommend they go into it, or do you recommend it with qualification?
Well, I have two sons that are 25, just about 25 and 23. I have a 10-year-old son also, but I didn't steer either one of them in that direction. The job has gone definitely a different way than it really should have. I speak about the times in the 80s, how it was great. It's not so great anymore. You're being second-guessed everything you do. And everybody has a camera, and they give you a little snippet of what happened in an incident, and you get judged on it. So it's a lot harder than it was. And you know what? You don't get the backing from the public and the media. It's very bad situation. That's what it was.
When we talk about the whole move with technology, to go to the first part of what you mentioned about, you know, people having cameras on their phones and the like. The technology, you know, some people will say it can be both a blessing and a curse. Can technology, though, aid police work in a way that it was not able to earlier?
It certainly can. I mean, you see where body cameras have, you know, police officers are wearing body cameras and throughout the country, and they'll show a situation where they got a police officer unfortunately had to, you know, use deadly physical force, and they'll show the whole scene. They'll show exactly what happened and what led up to it. So it can work out in that favor, in that light. But sometimes you have just people on the street, and they chop it up and edit it and just show you what they want to show you. So it can work for you, it can work against you.
And when we talk about the kind of qualifications that one needs to become a police officer, what do you point to?
What I think should be, it's more of a character thing. You know, it's funny when I say that I didn't want to be a police officer. I remember saying that to my younger sister, who's 2 years behind me in school. And, you know, she says, of course you were going to be a police officer. I said, why would you say that? And she says, oh, you were policing the school when you were in school. You didn't let anybody pick on anybody. I played football in school. You know, me and my friends, you know, we've always protected the weaker kids. We didn't let any bullying go on. You know, that's the thing that a lot of police officers have. They have that mindset to protect. Actually, you know, it sounds, you know, kind of, not true, but it definitely is true. You have that in you to try and help people. And most police officers are in it, you know, do it for the right reason. As much as everybody wants to portray them as something else, we're generally there to help. And that's the what you should have in your character, that you want to help others.
How strong a factor is, having at least some level of higher education, like a college education? How big a factor do you think that should be for police officers these days?
Well, you know what? It can never hurt. The more schooling you have can never hurt you. But police department, it's a job of common sense. You know, you can have degrees out your yin-yang, but not a whole lot of common sense. You know, it's that's something that can't be taught. You either have common sense or you don't. I know a lot of smart people that do crazy things, but, you know, hopefully you have both.
And typically, how long does it take to become a police officer?
Well, I mean, you take the civil service test, and hopefully then you get called within a couple of years, and then you go through all sorts of sort of background processing. to make sure, you know, that you're worthy of taking the job. Once you get past that, you have to go through medical and physical fitness requirements. And then hopefully you get past all that and you go into the academy. And then the academy is usually 6 to 7 months of training before you get on the street.
And not everybody listening to us may be familiar with exactly what a police academy is like. It's I'm a little bit familiar with this because in one of my other professions, I teach at a college where there's a police academy literally on campus, so I'm familiar with how the academy works. But what's involved with a police academy?
Well, I went through two. I went through the New York City Police Academy, and then I went through Nassau. So I know all about academies. You know what it is? It's like somebody described it as parochial school, but it's just a little bit more intense. You go through all sorts of training. You go firearms. You go through, Nassau County. We have all sorts of medical training. There's all you have to learn sociology. You have to learn penal law. All different things. You have driving. Emergency vehicle operation and control training. You have to pass tests in that. You go through fire academy too as a part of it. It's jam packed, and it's 6 months into when you go out in field training and you get taught some more. And, in the police department, you can be doing something. You can be on the street for 20, 30 years, and you'll learn something new. It's that job. There's always something that pops up, and you're like, hey, I never saw that before. So you're always learning.
And after you pass the academy, how do you then wind up getting placed in law enforcement?
Well, once you get through the academy, they put you into a patrol precinct, and you stay there. And, you can stay there for the remainder of your career. You can branch out into, you could take promotional exams, become a sergeant, lieutenant, captain, and move up the ladder. That way you can become a detective. On my job, you can go to Bureau of Special Operation. They're the ninjas. They're the guys that go out there with the that back up the cops. You could go to emergency service, same thing. All different, we have all different details that you can go into from patrol, but patrol is the backbone, the patrol precinct. Like when you call 911, that's who you're going to get.
And do you get to pick the location?
Generally, no. They put you in it. Hopefully, especially in Nassau County, they base it sometimes on where they live. If you live out in Suffolk County, they're going to want to put you somewhere closer to the border. If you live in New York City, they'll put you somewhere on the west end of the county. But if you live in a county, they'll put you almost anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And then what is it that can disqualify somebody from becoming a cop?
Disqualify?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the academy, you have to mess up. Yeah, you have to, not pass your test. You have to, not be police material. They break your chops while you're in there. They don't, they put you through it. It's as much, they work on building you up. And that, but the first thing I think they start with is tearing you down before they build you up. And, not everybody can put up with it. Not everybody had a father who was a city fireman that made you tough every step of the way, But a lot of us did.
In introducing you, and we're talking with James McDermott, who's president of the Nassau County Police Benevolent Association, what exactly is the Nassau County PBA?
Well, we are the police officers in Nassau County. All police officers, we also have associate members that are detectives and supervisors, too. So we're about 25 or 50 strong, 50% of the officers, too.
Okay, and when we're talking about the Nassau County PBA, and there are things that we're going to get into in our discussion where some of the people listening to us may want to find out more information. Perhaps there are people who want to be in contact with you. Is there an online resource that they can use?
You know what? Yes. What are we? NASAPBA.org. You can always reach through there. You can call the office, 516-294-6230, and get in contact with one of us there, too.
And there are different events that you are involved in throughout the year.
Well, what we do generally is, like when I said, we represent the offices. We negotiate contracts. We protect the police officers that are involved in disciplinary situations. We promote the police department, the police officers. So we're involved. We're involved 24/7. 365 days a year. So it's not like, we're in the office or out of the office. It's a very, very involved job.
Mm-hmm. Interesting discussion we're having. We're going to take a pause in our chat, come back, talk more with you. We'll get into talking about whether or not there are enough cops on the streets and also
okay.
Get into talking, too, about this whole situation with MS-13. There's a lot to talk about with that.
Very
interesting getting your perspective, too. James McDermott, president of the Nassau County Police Benevolent Association, is our guest this hour of our program. After our 8 o'clock update, after your update, Mr. Minko, it's Rick Wolf, who's along with the Sports Edge here on The Fan. This is Bob Salter. We're in discussion with James McDermott on our program. He's president of the Nassau County Police Benevolent Association, PBA. He's joined us in this hour of our program. Natural question that would come up, I alluded to this before we paused for update and messages. The number of cops on the streets in New York, are there enough?
That's a good question. Are there ever enough? You brought up MS-13. They're in the ranks of the 2,500 that we know of in Nassau County. And to combat that, we need as many police officers, we need as many detectives, we need as many gang unit detectives as we possibly can, have. So do we have enough? I think we fall short in the detective area, and we can always need more, use more police officers for sure.
All right, let's get into talking about this situation with MS-13, because some of the people listening to us may have heard that name but have no idea, no clue as to exactly what that actually means. First of all, what is MS-13?
Well, it's a violent street gang, and they deal in drug trafficking, human trafficking. It's a gang in which they recruit from their own community. They grab the young kids and they'll tell them, listen, you're going to join the gang or we're going to kill you. So they have absolutely no choice but to get involved. They've been involved in very brutal murders, where they've mutilated other gang members and civilians. Just recently in Massapequa, they just dug up and found a body of a second body in a park there of a victim of MS-13 gang violence. It's something that you think in Nassau County, you think of Nassau County, Long Island, you think of the beaches, you think of the North Shore, the Gold Coast, and you don't realize that they've infiltrated the area. They were mostly out in Suffolk County, but Suffolk County took a very proactive approach towards the policing there, and they kind of squoze them out of Nassau, out of Suffolk County and into Nassau County, where now we're dealing with it, and we got our hands full.
All right, I've got to ask the question because I'm curious about this, and I was curious very first time I heard about this situation. Why? I mean, this is a gang that, as I understand it, formed back in the 1980s, and really When I had heard initially about MS-13, I was hearing about this basically on the West Coast.
Yeah.
How did MS-13 get here? Or is that a stupid question?
Well, you know what? Yeah, I don't want to get into it, but I have to, I guess, that, you know, when, you know, people are coming into this country illegally, they're not just going to the West Coast. They're going to everywhere. And New York is one of the destinations. And, you know, this is a Salvadorian gang. They come here, but they have the roots. They start new chapters wherever they land. And unfortunately, they've landed here in Nassau County.
And when we're talking about, you know, a situation where in Suffolk County there was an aggressive approach, you said, was taken.
Yep.
The natural thought would be, are information resources on situations like this shared between Nassau and Suffolk County law enforcement?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we work with Suffolk, we work with the city, we work with the federal government, we work with the state. You know, it's just, you know, it's an everyday problem, you know, and, you know, we're dealing with people worrying about, you know, people's, you know, civil rights, which of course you have to worry about, but more so than what they're actually doing. This is a violent gang. They don't think twice to kill somebody. They'll kill one of your family members and not lose a second of sleep over it, but everybody seems to be concerned about them, which is very disheartening. You know, it's one of those situations. You're not just fighting the gang. You're fighting everything else that, you know, everyone else that's worried about, you had the President of the United States call them animals, and then you have people defending them, you know, saying, oh, that's wrong that he called them animals. I don't know. I think when you brutally murder people and you hack them up with machetes, and they're animals. I agree with the President in that case. I agree with anybody that says that these people have given up the right to be called people when they decide to kill others in a manner like that, and just be involved in a life of crime.
You know, one of the things that we're hearing more and more in reports in this area are about attacks on people with machetes. And realistically, you didn't used to hear this sort of thing. What's behind that? Is that something that's basically designed to be more personal in the attack?
You know, that's something I don't know about, but you know, it's more brutal. It's when you're hacking at somebody with a blade that's, you know, 16 inches long.
Right.
Think about that. Think it probably is meant to be as intimidating as it is, as a weapon of choice. I mean, you have these brutal, brutal mutilations where they're hacking body parts off, arms, legs, heads. I would think that's done for a reason, to intimidate their whoever they're trying to intimidate. Mm.
Is there any idea of how big MS-13 is?
Nationally?
Yes.
You know, I don't have the numbers offhand. I would only believe that it has to be in hundreds of thousands.
And typically, how old are the members of this gang?
Well, from my understanding, they start young, and as young as, you know, 10, 11 years old, they get these children involved. And then, you know, and then time comes, and, you know, most of them are in their teens and early 20s. But they've been known, you know, to stay in the gang into their 30s. They also happen to die a lot because of they're involved in that in that lifestyle, you know, that they don't last long.
Mm. And why is human trafficking such a big business for MS-13?
It's prostitution. It's money. It's you know, the world's oldest profession. It's something that you know, they're gonna make money. You know, money in. It's everything. You know, everything with gangs is, you know, besides the violence, is based around making money. You know, so it just falls in line with what they stand for.
The natural thought as well, James, is what is it that the Nassau PBA is doing about MS-13 on Long Island?
We represent the police officers. We try and work with the department. We don't make the decisions for the Nassau County Police Department. That is made by the administration. Mm-hmm. But we try to work with the police department and the administration as much as possible. We use whatever influence we have to influence politicians, influence the administration to get us the best equipment, the best technology. We do whatever we can to get our guys put in a position that they are, you know, best suited and most ready to deal with these troubles.
Well,
these issues.
You've got to be concerned about your members' safety first.
That's exactly what we're concerned with. That's what we need.
Mm.
In a nutshell.
Civilians who are concerned, is there anything that they can do about the issue?
You know what it is? Police officers can do so much. You know what? Any good police officer always had, you know, people in the public that would come to them and tell them, you know, what's going on in the community. It takes very brave persons to get involved, but there's, you know, situations where you can be, you know, remain anonymous, come forward and tell the police officers of, you know, the police department of anything and everything that's going on. You know, we just visit these areas. As much as we're there patrolling the streets, we don't live in the communities. So there's only so much information we can get without involvement from the community. If you know of anything that's any wrongdoing, contact the police. If you sense there's something going on wrong, you're usually right. Contact the police. We don't work in a bubble. We work with the community, and they help us more often than you can believe, and get, you know, solving crimes.
Well, that's a good question I want to ask you is, do people come forward with information these days? You know, because very often we'll hear people say they don't want to be involved or they don't want to get involved because they're fearing for their own safety.
Of course, and especially with gangs like MS-13, because when you're talking about the machete earlier, maybe that's for that reason, to intimidate people into coming forward because they don't want to be that person, you know, or that victim. But we try and work. The police department tries to work. Federal government tries to work with people that'll come forward with information to keep you anonymous and keep you as anonymous and out of it as earthly possible. You can come forward and give us information, and we'll do whatever we have to do to protect you from that point.
And with MS-13 members, are they identifiable in a certain fashion? I mean, are the particular colors they're wearing, dress?
And sure, tattoos are one of the big things with MS-13. Most of these guys are all linked up, and they have gang symbols and they'll have MS-13 symbols on their bodies. Yeah, they are definitely identifiable.
And that sort of thing is used to identify themselves, but I'm assuming it also is used to send a message.
Again, it's that, like you were talking about, it's that whole fear that, you know, that they're putting out there, you know, to be afraid of me. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at these people and they're tattooed from head to toe and, you know, and wearing, you know, gang colors and, you know, it's an intimidating look, and it's, it's certainly designed to intimidate people.
And then the other aspect of that thought is those colors, the tattoos, also can be part of that whole recruitment process.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, young kids are easily influenced, you know. They see stuff and, you know, I want to be a part of that. I don't know why anybody in the world would ever want to be a part of a violent gang, but when you know, I didn't grow up, you know, streets of certain areas where that's all you have. I mean, that's to them, I gather it could become a family. You know, that's all, what I've heard, that, you know, to belong to something. You know, I grew up belonging to a family, a group of friends. So I played sporting teams. They became like a family, you know, family to you. But, you know, you grow up in a bad neighborhood, you don't have much. You don't have all these things, and it's easy to fall victim to this.
Mm. And that motto of kill, rape, control. I mean, that's a heck of a motto for any organization.
Like I said, like the president said, they're animals. You know, you that's your motto. Think about that. When everybody's worrying about, these people are here legally or illegally, they're here and they're violent as, excuse me, I don't know how to say it, but violent as all hell, and you don't think twice about killing people, and they're coming out and they're telling you what they're about, and you know, unfortunately, you have to fight fire with fire, and you know what, I know that in this day and age, that upsets people, but that's how it is.
Clearly referred to as the most dangerous gang in the world, and I guess that's an appropriate title.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know what? It would be nice that somehow this trend would reverse. With the police department, trust the police, you know, have more trust in the police department and less rhetoric and less belief that, you know, that police officers are out there trying to hurt people, because it was certainly not, you know, there was a time there where it had saying that police officers wake up in the morning thinking about killing a minority. It's like, that's the craziest thing I ever heard, you know, in the world, you know, no police officer wake up in the morning and think about killing anyone. The last thing in the world they want to do is kill somebody. But, you put this out there, this nonsense, and people buy into it. I see just yesterday, there was a news article about Starbucks, where the Starbucks asked police officers that were in there to leave because one of the patrons didn't feel safe because police officers were in Starbucks. I could be anywhere. I couldn't be any further from the truth. I mean, you are protected. The police officers are there to protect you. I don't know what the world's thinking right now, but we're there to protect you. You know, because we're carrying a firearm and that's offensive to you. What do you think these MS-13 people are carrying? You know, I don't know what they want us to hit them with. A water balloon. I don't know.
James McDermott, who is president of the Nassau County PBA, is our guest this hour of our program on The Fan. We're going to take a pause in our discussion, come back to talk more with you. 7:40 is our time, and Mr. Minko has our look around the sporting world this Sunday morning.
New York.
It's Sunday morning on The Fan. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. It is Ed Randall who's along after that 9 o'clock update this Sunday morning. And we are in a discussion with James McDermott, who is president of the Nassau County PBA. He is our guest this hour of our program on The Fan. What I said we'd do, too, is to include some thoughts from some of the folks who are listening to us. I want to get into, in just a moment, talking about a situation with police officers literally being used as crossing guards in Nassau County. And I know, James, you have some very strong thoughts in that regard. But let's see if we can do a call from somebody who I believe is on point with something that you've raised as a point in our discussion. Our number here at The Fan is 877-337-6666. Let's go to Christina in Delray Beach. Christina, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'm originally from the Bronx. I am Delray Beach now. I do have family that live in Westbury, so I do visit the Boston in Nassau County. Now, I do listen to The Fan all the time. I respect the gentleman that you have on today and his views. However, I will say that sometimes I think we take it a little too extreme. I have researched MS-13. They're literally 1% of the U.S. population of gangs. The reason most of them use machetes is because we in Caribbean islands, Central American islands, we crop fields, and that's what the tool that we're most used accustomed to use. And that sometimes that can be perpetrated as they're I know they're brutal. I'm not saying that MS-13 is a gang that sits here and they're happy and everything like that. But when Chicago and all the wars in Chicago was happening over liquor and bootlegging, they didn't kick out millions of Italians and call them all psychos and killers because of this. You know, since Hillary, and I'm not even a Democrat, but since Hillary went down and tried to do whatever she did in Honduras since 2009, these things have been coming up and happening. Obama didn't solve it. Clinton didn't solve it. Immigration is a bad issue. Violence in Nassau County is a bad issue. But you have Hell's Angels. You have plenty of gangs throughout history that have brutalized groups of people. And also, I just want you to note that people don't actually think cops go out to shoot and murder brown and black people. I think that we don't realize how inherent and how many microcosms are in this world that subconsciously, even black people wake up hating other black people subconsciously because of how we live in this society today. I don't agree with the president, but I also don't agree with that everybody can't be brushed with the same stroke of shade. People who are in cages right now, children, I'm sorry, you cannot tell that they're going to be an MS-13 gang. They're trying to actually flee from that. They don't want to be a part of that. They don't see any actual, you know, life in that type of system. These are brutal people, but gangs usually are brutal people. Gangs usually kill other people for no reason but profitability. There are plenty of people that are being trafficked and shipped right now that are from Russia, that are from Iranian, Serbia, you know, from Western Europe. So I get what you're saying, sir, and I appreciate you coming on today and making this statement, because I don't think that the police in Nassau County, there is a lot more things they need to do than being crossing guards. I believe that highly. But I just want people to really, really consider that when you brush a group of people with one stroke, you throw in people in there that are not involved in any of this stuff. And just remember what the size of the gang you're talking about. There are other gangs out there that are way more brutal and way more harmful to our communities than MS-13 that we have to fight. And also, just to put on, people, working class people, cops, firefighters, we're getting screwed by this government. Don't be blind to the fact that people are not there for you. The government is not being there for you, taking care of you, and giving you the functions that you need in the society to make the society work.
All right, Christina.
So please remember that these
Christina,
people want to be...
Christina.
Pause.
Okay. Breathe.
No, I'm breathing. I've been breathing for the whole time, and I'm not trying to be upset.
Hang on. I'm talking. First of all, okay. So calm down.
No,
breathe.
I'm calm.
Okay.
I'm calm.
I appreciate that you've hit a
She's
whole.
She's passionate.
You've hit a whole lot of points. I appreciate that. Thank you for your call this morning. All right. James, would you like to respond at all?
Well, I don't disagree with anything that she said. I hope she doesn't think that what I was saying was against the whole El Salvadorian community. I think they're the ones being victimized the most, like I spoke about earlier. You're getting young boys that are being brought in at very, very young ages and saying, listen, you're going to join the gang or we're going to kill you. They're victimized. And it's their community that's getting victimized most by MS-13. And listen, we just spoke about MS-13 today. Yeah, she's brought up Hell's Angels. You know, listen, they're a concern of the police department just as well. You know, we unfortunately have to fight on you know, many different fronts. And I totally agree with her with a lot of things she said. She's a very emotional person, you know, and I appreciate that she understands what we do and, you know, that we're out there. But I hope she doesn't think that we're, you know, I'm painting a bad picture of that community. You know, I'm not. That's not what I was trying to do. I was speaking of the gang.
Okay, now let's shift into this area that I mentioned, and actually she mentioned it as well. The situation where there's apparently a crossing guard shortage in Nassau yep. County, as I understand. Okay, what exactly is happening?
Well, you know what? It's a situation between another union and the county. And mm-hmm. The county executive, Laura Curran, refuses to hire full-time crossing guards. And, you know, full-time crossing guards get health benefits as opposed to the part-timers who don't. And what happened was it was a very desirable job when you hired full-time people because of the health benefit package. Once you tried to hire our crossing guards and not give them that package, nobody really wanted the job. And what the fallback plan of the police commissioner was to backfill those spots, those mandatory spots that you have to put on a crossing with police officers, which is a very bad idea. Because what happens and what has happened, we have over 20 crossings in one precinct that have to be manned. And you only have 20 cars, police cars to handle it. So all the cars go out on crossing for a period of time in the morning, and then in the afternoon.
Wait a minute! You got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. You know, we did a press conference on this because of the danger of it. I mean, we were trying to speak to the commissioner about this, and you know what? He didn't fix it. And finally, after we did a press conference, They've addressed it, not to the likings of mine, because, you know, in the morning they're holding people over from the night tour to do the crossing, but in the afternoon they're taking people out of specialized units to handle it. It's at a crisis point right now. You know, they have to fix it. They're dawdling right now, and you have police officers that are, you know, handling crossings when they should be doing their specialized jobs. I mean, if you took them on patrol to work these specialized units to put them back on school crossings, it's ridiculous.
Does this actually happen in other places as well, besides?
You know what?
Nassau County?
I don't know that it happened anywhere else. If it happened somewhere else, then they're mismanaging wherever that happened. You know, I can just be concerned about what's happening in front of me and to my members. Say you have and we did have this in multiple times throughout the year, the school year, where you had police officers covering like 18 crossings out of 20 cars that are available. So you have two cars available for calls. Say they're rolling around in a life or death struggle with somebody, and they're calling for assistance. Their assistance, these police officers can't leave their foot post. Because God forbid they left the crossing. If they left the crossing and a child was struck, you know, they're bound to those crossings. So what happens is your assistance has to come from a neighboring precinct. And you know, when you're in a life or death struggle, seconds matter. Now you're making a response time for assistance, minutes. And you know what? And also for the 9/11 calls, when you're calling for assistance, you need other officers because you're giving somebody CPR. You got to get them to the hospital. Whatever it is, your response time is through the roof. It's mismanagement at its highest point.
What exactly does a crossing guard do?
Okay, it's that easy. And that's another thing. What a waste of resource. What we were talking about what a police officer has to go through to become a police officer on the street, and all the, you know, days of training, months and months of training and field training, and all you had to do was cross a child across the street. Yeah. Put on a traffic vest, put your hands up in the air, and, you know, work at the light the best that you can. I mean, you're taking police officers with all this training, and you're having them do this. It's a total waste of manpower. And your police officers supposed to be patrolling, and like we were talking about earlier, working with the community, trying to solve crimes. Riding around, giving people comfort that police officers are patrolling their area. They're not patrolling when they're stuck on crossings.
What about auxiliary police officers? Are they used? Can they be used?
No. And you know what? Auxiliary police officers are they're a whole different being. And then, you know, as far as using them, they really are restricted from using them in a situation like this. The county has to figure out the situation with the hiring of the police officers, make the job more attractive to the would-be crossing guard.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's an awful lot, and it's happening.
Yes, I can talk about this all day, unfortunately,
James.
But the administration and the county executives really dropped the ball on this, and it's been going on too long.
James McDermott, who is president of the Nassau County Police Benevolent Association, our guest in this hour of our program on The Fan. You've covered an awful lot here. Thank you very much for being kind with your time and sharing the information that you have, and I do appreciate the update that you have provided to us. Can you just give the contact information again for the Nassau County PBA?
Nassau PBA.org, and our PBA office is 516-294-6230.
James, thank you very much for joining us and for being so kind with your time this morning, too. Certainly good luck. Continue and be safe.
Thank you so much. Take care now.
Mr. Minko has our top of the hour look around the sporting world. Then, Mr. Minko.
Yep. Well,
it is Sunday morning, isn't it?
It certainly is.
It still is, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, I just had to check there. Right. You know, I've had an eventful morning.
Yes, you have. I've never seen you this happy in a long time. That's a good sign.
You know, it must be because you're here, man. That's only one of the reasons. Here's a second.
High chair.
Third.
Yeah.
In the control room right now. Rick Wolf is along with the Sports Edge program.
Yeah.
And then a fourth reason, and highly appropriate in that cleanup position in the batting order, Ed Randall will be along talking baseball. And you know that you enjoy that as much as I do.
So the Ed Heads.
after 9 o'clock this Sunday morning.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
The pressure on data centers has never been greater. Whether you're expanding capacity, supporting AI workloads, or building new facilities, Graybar works alongside you with the solutions, specialists, and logistics expertise you need today. We help you power performance every step of the way, so your operation is ready now. Yep, Graybar does that.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter x.com/AI.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.